We are not a nation that says, don't ask, don't tell. We are a nation that says, out of many, we are one. While today marks the end of a particular struggle that has lasted almost two decades, this is a moment more than two centuries in the making. And now it is my honor to sign this bill into law.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Taiwan moves to equalize civil marriage and ban the cure. North Carolina lawmakers double-cross Charlotte and keep their bathroom bill. And do remember Obama's repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Frances O'Brien.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news interaffecting LGBT communities around the world for the 3 weeks ending January 7th, 2017. Taiwan has taken two important steps to make life easier for the island's LGBTQ citizens. The first was the advance of a civil marriage equality bill, and the second was a move to outlaw so-called cure therapy for LGBTQ patients. Thousands of both supporters and opponents of marriage equality rallied in late December outside the nation's legislature, known as the Legislative Yuan, following initial committee approval of the bill to open civil marriage to same-gender couples. Supporters hoisted pro-equality banners and waved rainbow flags. Police arrested more than 100 anti-equality demonstrators when they attempted to break into the committee hearing. Opponents then moved to the presidential office to call for the resignation of Taiwan's pro-equality president, Tsai Ing-wen. A spokesperson for the protesters complained that a committee of 13 legislators should not decide how the nation defines family and marriage. The legislature's Judiciary and Organic Laws and Statutes Committee passed draft amendments to the Civil Code on December 26th that would give lesbian and gay couples the same marital, parental, and adoptive rights and obligations as heterosexual couples. According to the Taipei Times, the next legislative review is not expected until April.
Taiwan's Ministry of Health and Welfare greeted the new year with draft legislation to outlaw so-called reparative or change therapy that claims to make LGBTQ people straight. An increasing number of jurisdictions around the world have outlawed the debunked practice for patients under the age of 18. Taiwan's proposal appears to ban the practice for adults as well. Citizens can comment on the draft legislation until the end of January. After considering opinions expressed during the public consultation period, the ministry could publish the final regulations as early as March. They would be added to the island's Physicians Act and would punish any practitioner of so-called change therapy with fines and possible suspensions.
Meanwhile, Taipei has become the third city in Taiwan to allow same-gender couples to apply for partnership certificates, following Kaohsiung and Taichung. The island's biggest municipality began offering family care leave and the ability to consult on a partner's medical care to registered lesbian and gay couples in late December.
The largest city in Japan, Sapporo, became in late December the latest in that country to consider issuing formal recognition certificates to same-gender couples. The city of about 2 million people could join Iga and the Shibuya and Setagaya wards in Tokyo, which began issuing certificates to lesbian and gay couples in 2016. Officials in Sapporo say they hope to begin issuing their own recognition certificates by March 2018. Although public opinion polls show increasing support for civil marriage equality in the country, a majority of respondents in the most recent survey, Japan's federal government, refuses to legally recognize same-gender couples.
Even though one of its staunchest defenders, now former Governor Pat McCrory, is no longer in power, North Carolina's so-called bathroom bill, HB2, remains alive and well. That odious law not only denies trans people access to the public restrooms that match their gender identity, it bans local governments from enacting anti-discrimination protections for LGBT people. Passage of such an ordinance in Charlotte led the Republican-controlled state legislature to quickly enact HB2, a bill that McCrory enthusiastically signed. The Charlotte City Council understood that repeal of its ordinance was necessary before North Carolina lawmakers would consider repealing HB2. But after the city did that, the state legislature, still dominated by Republicans, failed to repeal HB2 in a special session called for that purpose on December 21st. Democratic governor-elect Roy Cooper lamented the action, saying that it was our best chance to get this done. But, vowing to continue pushing for repeal, it cannot be our only chance. Republican State Senator Buck Newton charged that Democrats only wanted a repeal in order to force radical social engineering and shared bathrooms across North Carolina at the expense of our state's families, our reputation, and our economy. He seemed oblivious to the hundreds of millions of dollars already lost to the state in boycotts and event cancellations because of HB 2. The North Carolina law is being challenged as unconstitutional in federal court.
Texas Republicans also seem oblivious to the consequences of passing a similar law in the Lone Star State. The Texas Privacy Act was officially introduced on January 5th. It requires all state residents to use bathrooms, locker rooms, or other sex-segregated public facilities that match the gender on their birth certificates. It also prohibits local governments from passing ordinances that protect LGBT rights in public restrooms or other intimate settings. The Associated Press reports that the largest business lobbying group in Texas warns that passing the HB 2 clone could cost the state up to $8.5 billion and more than 100,000 jobs.
But Virginia's Democratic governor, Terry McAuliffe, this week issued an executive order banning state contracts with companies that discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity. The January 5th edict applies to contracts entered into by the state's executive branch and would apply to such work as building roads and highways. It expands an order McAuliffe signed 3 years ago banning anti-LGBT bias in the state's workforce. McAuliffe also announced this week that he'll veto a Republican-sponsored bill to regulate bathroom use in Virginia if it reaches his desk.
Kansas became the fourth state in the union to make California's official no-fly list. The Attorney General recently added Kansas to the three other states with anti-queer laws, for which most taxpayer-funded state travel has been banned. Kansas joins Mississippi, North Carolina, and Tennessee. The Attorney General's office doesn't explain its reason for including the quartet of states on the travel ban on the main page of its website, but it includes links to the anti-LGBT laws each state has passed at the end of a separate page titled Frequently Asked Questions. The list could grow. In addition to Texas, anti-LGBT legislation is also being considered in Alabama, Georgia, Iowa, and West Virginia. According to the LGBT Washington Blade newspaper, eyes will also be on Iowa, Missouri, and Kentucky, where the November elections swept Republicans into control of both the legislative and executive branches.
A federal judge in Texas has gutted provisions in the Affordable Care Act, commonly known as Obamacare, that protect the health care rights of transgender people. U.S. District Judge Reed O'Connor ruled that requiring medical practitioners to treat transgender patients violates the federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act. The Affordable Care Act was passed in 2010 with an anti-discrimination clause designed to prevent insurers from charging customers more or denying coverage based on age or gender. The lawsuit challenging that part of the law was brought by Texas, Wisconsin, Kentucky, Nebraska, and Kansas, as well as the Christian Medical and Dental Association and the religious-affiliated Franciscan Alliance, a 14-hospital system operating in Indiana and Illinois. O'Connor's ruling comes just 4 months after he blocked an Obama administration directive in another lawsuit filed by many of those same states that required public schools to let transgender students use the bathrooms consistent with their gender identity.
Joe Maldonado, an 8-year-old transgender boy, was kicked out of his Cub Scouts pack in Secaucus, New Jersey, in late December after some parents complained to the Northern New Jersey Council of the Boy Scouts. His mother, Christy, told USA Today that it was no secret that Joe is transgender and that not one of the kids said you don't belong here. Joe himself said he was way more angry than sad. "My identity is a boy. If I was them, I would let every person in the world go in. It's right to do." Even though the Boy Scouts of America has lifted its ban on openly gay members or adult leaders, a spokeswoman said that membership by transgender scouts is a separate issue that has yet to be addressed by the organization.
But finally, a new school that opened in the port city of Kochi, in the Indian state of Kerala, at the end of December may be the first of its kind. Its focus is helping transgender adults from 25 to 50 who had dropped out of school complete their education. The residential school is headed by Vijay Rajamalika, who noted that Kerala has some 25,000 transgenders, and 57% of them were forced to drop out of school due to stigma. Indian Supreme Court ruled in 2014 that the country's estimated 2 million transgender people have equal rights under the law. While the ruling allowed transgender people to marry, inherit property, and fill quotas in jobs and educational institutions, discrimination is still commonplace in the country's socially stratified population. Most Roman Catholic churches aren't generally considered to be welcoming places for LGBT people, despite Pope Francis's public statement urging compassionate pastoral care for sexual and gender minorities. But trans activist Malika is with the Sisters of the Congregation of Mother Carmel. She said her organization, which hopes to expand beyond its current 10-student capacity, includes Roman Catholic priests, nuns, and laypeople.
That's News Wrap for the 3 weeks ending January 7th, 2017. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Frances O'Brien.
We'll do an about-face to recall the liberation of the U.S. military. But first,
we got long stories,
short stories,
art stories,
sport stories,
books about the wild, wild west.
Yeehaw!
We got fairy tales,
scary tales.
We've even got some hairy tales.
It's hard to choose which ones are best.
So hard!
We got silly books,
sad books,
good books,
bad books.
They're all great in their way. But whichever choose, hey, you just can't lose. Come on and read a book today.
Queer Life and Literature commentator Janet Mason fires up the time machine with The Right Side of History, 100 Years of LGBTQI Activism by Adrian Brooks, and Literary Philadelphia by Tom Nichols.
I've seen a lot of history, especially in the LGBTQ movement. But even so, I find it helpful to have a refresher now and then. This is particularly true with LGBTQ history, which sadly to say has been erased with a few notable exceptions. Knowing your history is necessary, but reading about it can also be enjoyable. In The Right Side of History, 100 Years of LGBTQI Activism by Adrian Brooks, Cleese Press, which is put together as a collection of lively essays, many by well-known LGBTQ activists, writers, and public figures, including Barney Frank, I learned more than a few things. I was particularly taken with New York Times best-selling author Patricia Nell Warren's essay on Bayard Rustin. Rustin spoke out about gay rights in the 1940s, and he went on to become a major civil rights activist and Dr. Martin Luther King's right-hand man. Warren gets to the heart of why history is important when she writes about teaching LGBTQ students of color in Los Angeles who were hungry to know that they had some towering historical role models like Rustin. In Literary Philadelphia, The History Press by Tom Nichols, I particularly enjoy the insights that Nichols, a gay writer and activist, provides. This includes a mention of Walt Whitman. The bearded poet was a familiar sight on Market Street, along with the lesser-known gay writers and non-LGBT Philadelphia literati, such as James Mitcher and Pearl S. Buck. In the chapter called Poetdelphia, he writes about poet Jim Corey and quotes him extensively about his stumbling across the mentor book of major American poets. It was sacred text. It explains everything. I still have it. 5 years later, it was all about the Beats and Bohemian Rebellion. Fast forward 10 years, and a lot of what I was writing was gay poetry. In my 60s, I write in different voices to satisfy different ends. Short poems appeal because of the challenge of getting something complicated into 7 lines, cut-ups, and collage, because they're fun and with any luck can be fun for the reader, too. Jim and I were part of a poetry collective that he founded in the early to mid-90s called Inside to Riot Press. In this same chapter, I was surprised to come across a photo of myself, Jim Corey, and poet Sia Conrad, also an Inside to Write Collective member, taken in 1994. We all look much younger. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
You're listening to This Way Out, brought to you by you. Your charitable donations keep this program on the air. We've produced some special CDs to say thank you to our supporters.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next president of the United States, Donald Trump!
As an African American, as an openly gay man, and as an American, that frightens me.
I hate to say that Donald Trump unified us in that way.
Whatever it takes.
Our latest CD special, Trump Drama and the Dawn of the Donald, is hot off the presses and available now at thiswayout.org. President Barack Obama bid farewell to the U.S. military at a joint armed forces ceremony this week, where he said that the full inclusion of women and LGBT people made the military stronger now than it was when he took office. The repeal of the Clinton administration's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy in December 2010 drew a chorus of hail to the chief from queer service members, in particular one Army Lieutenant Dan Choi, who a year earlier became the poster soldier for repeal when he dared to come out on MSNBC's The Rachel Maddow Show.
Another U.S. president, another gay man, and a U.S. senator were the latest to make history late last month. We'll hear in a few minutes about a very literal exchange between Lieutenant Dan Choi and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, and why Congressman Barney Frank of Massachusetts could be called clean and articulate. But let's start with President Barack Obama's December 22nd foray into the textbooks, the day he signed legislation to authorize repeal of the U.S. military's odious Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. Free Speech Radio News reporter Danny Wood covered the celebratory ceremony.
We are not a nation that says, don't ask, don't tell. We are a nation that says, out of many, we are one. We are a nation that welcomes the service of every patriot. We are a nation that believes that all men and women are created equal. Those are the ideals that generations have fought for. Those are the ideals that we uphold today, and now it is my honor to sign this bill into law.
Repealing the 17-year-old Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy was one of Obama's campaign promises. Before the celebratory crowd, Obama thanked the many people who fought long and hard to reach this day, including military members who've been discriminated against throughout U.S. history.
Finally, I want to speak directly to the gay men and women currently serving in our military. For a long time, your service has demanded a particular kind of sacrifice. You've been asked to carry the added burden of secrecy and isolation, and all the while you've put your lives on the line for the freedoms and privileges of citizenship that are not fully granted to you. You're not the first to have carried this burden. For while today marks the end of a particular struggle that has lasted almost two decades, this is a moment more than two centuries in the making. There will never be a full accounting of the heroism demonstrated by gay Americans in service to this country. Their service has been obscured in history. It's been lost to prejudices that have waned in our own lifetimes. But at every turn, at every crossroads in our past, we know gay Americans fought just as hard, gave just as much to protect this nation and the ideals for which it stands.
The president said officials will implement the repeal swiftly and efficiently. To find out more about the transition, we go to Aaron Tax, legal director with Service Members Legal Defense Network. He was at the signing ceremony. Now, your legal group was founded when Don't Ask originally came into law in 1993, so today's repeal must be quite a day for you.
I think it's quite an accomplishment, and it really rests on the shoulders of people who have been advocating and pushing for repeal for years and years and years, and even before the organization was founded, back to World War II, when there was a regulatory ban on gay people serving in the military. So this victory has been a long time coming.
What was the key turning point in achieving the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell?
I think the day Congress finally caught up to the American people who, ever since 1993, have been increasingly supportive of open service. And I think, you know, if you have polls showing 80% of the American public supporting repeal, and you have the Pentagon Working Group study that showed 92% of folks in the military either know of someone in their unit to be gay or believe someone in their unit to be gay and had absolutely no problems with it, I think at some point, you know, the law has got to change, and that's what finally happened today.
What's the first step of the implementation process?
Well, the two key components of implementation are going to be leadership and training, and we're going to look to the military to provide leadership on this front and to provide the necessary training so that the military is going to be a welcoming place for those who wish to serve openly.
What do you see as some of the key hurdles to overcome?
I think at the end of the day, there aren't significant hurdles. I mean, I think there's going to have to be regulations that have to be tweaked. But at the end of the day, I mean, I think it's really going to be a non-event, and I think that's what we've seen based on the experiences of other countries who've had to face this very same situation. Many of our allies had bans on gay people serving, got rid of them, and the response was it really wasn't a big deal at the end of the day. And I think that's what we're going to find here. I think that's because, as the Pentagon study showed, when people know someone in their unit is gay or believe that person to be gay, they really, by and large, don't have a problem with it. It's easy to hate someone that you don't know. And I think it's a lot different when you start to know that your battle buddy is gay, and it's someone who you've worked with for years and years and years and has your back.
Some anti-war and anti-poverty groups aren't as celebratory about today's repeal as you are and many others. Not from an equal rights point of view, but they say from the perspective that militarism and war profiteering don't serve the true interests of anyone, including gays and lesbians.
Well, I think at the end of the day, we have to look at service in the military as a fundamental part of what it means to be a citizen in this country. And when you don't have equal rights for those in the military, it's hard to have equal rights for anyone else in this country. We need an Employment Non-Discrimination Act to bar employment discrimination in the private sector and in the government sector when you have a law in the books that says gay people must be fired simply for being gay in the military. So I think this passage of this law will go a long way in furthering the rights of LGBT individuals all across the country.
Aaron Tax with Service Members Legal Defense Network, thanks very much for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I'm Danny Wood in San Francisco.
MSNBC News commentator Rachel Maddow heralded the imminent demise of Don't Ask, Don't Tell that night with a live audience at New York City's 92nd Street Y.
It seems important to me that the president was freaking elated to sign the Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal bill today. So that's one. That's thing one, the historic thing today. Thing two, the thing I can't quite believe happened, even though I know it did, is this. You may remember this happened in July at Netroots Nation, which is the big progressive conference that was held in Vegas this year. Check this out.
This morning, Dan Troy gave me this to give to you. That's his West Point ring. He says it doesn't mean what it did mean to him anymore. And this is his discharge.
He earned this ring, and I'm going to give it back to him. I don't need his ring to fulfill the promise that I made to him.
Thank you. When it's signed, Senator,
okay.
When it's signed.
That's good enough with me. When the bill's signed, I'll keep it safely and give it back to him. Okay? When we get it passed, you'll take it back, right?
I sure will, but I'm going to hold you accountable.
Okay, that's good.
So that was Dan Choi and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. That took place in July. And then today, Senator Reid posts this on Twitter. I literally see it while I'm on Twitter wasting time. He posts this on Twitter 5 months after I promised to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I'm so happy to give this West Point ring to Lieutenant Dan Choi. And then, ta-da, link to this picture of Senator Reid giving Dan Choi back his West Point ring. Dan Choi is such a fierce activist now. Cast in flame, right? Here's how Dan Choi responded also on Twitter to that. He wrote this, quote, "The next time I get a ring from a man, I expect it to be for full equal American merit." Two. And I said I had one other thing I wanted to show you. Thing three. This is not the historic thing. This is not OMG, I can't believe it. But this also happened, and I think it is important that I tell you that it happened. Behold, Congressman Barney Frank, Democrat of Massachusetts, and a reporter from a conservative news service called Cybercast.
I have a question for you about the working group that Secretary Gates put into effect. He appointed the Defense Department working group. They recommended that straight military personnel will have to shower with homosexual
Showering with homosexual? What do you think happens in gyms all of America? What do you think happens in the House of Representatives? Of course people shower with homosexuals. What a silly issue. What do you think goes wrong when people shower with homosexuals? Do you think it's the spray makes it catching? I mean, people shower with homosexuals in college dormitories, in gyms where people play sports, in gyms elsewhere. It is a complete non-issue.
So that recommendation, you think, is a non-issue?
To accept the principle that homosexuals can't shower with other people is a degree of discrimination that goes far beyond this. I mean, we don't get ourselves dry cleaned.
We don't get ourselves dry cleaned. Ta-da! Three things that for various reasons I'm glad I saw today. Don't Ask, Don't Tell is dead, and Barney Frank is still hilarious. I am so happy to know about the dry cleaning thing. I always felt like an outcast in the community, having never done that.
And that was MSNBC's Pressed to Perfection, Rachel Maddow.
I'm grateful for all that you've done to work with us to accomplish some amazing transformations over these last 7.5 years.
We say goodbye to the man who identifies himself as a fierce advocate for LGBT rights, U.S. President Barack Obama, next time on This Way Out. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Wenzel Jones, Francis O'Brien, and Janet Mason contributed program material, with thanks as always to Steve Pride. Between the Lions performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our individual listener donors who make this program possible. It's never too late to log on to thiswayout.org and join the family. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Google+. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078 USA. For the entire This Way Out family, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on Free Radio Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz, California, 2BLU, Katoomba, New South Wales, WDRT, Viroqua, Wisconsin, and on more than 200 local stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now y'all stay tuned.